Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name's Kerry Stevenson, and today I'm speaking with Simon Mitchell. He is the Managing Director of Southern Gold. That is ASX code, S-A-U. Now, before we get stuck into Southern Gold, the projects, and what's going on, I want to talk about where they're operating in and why you as investors need to take a good look at this. Simon, great to see you.
Hi, Kerry. Good to be back.
Simon, you've got a very busy drill schedule coming up, which I do want to get into later in the program. But first up, not many people understand South Korea, which is the jurisdiction that Southern Gold is working in at the moment. And I think you're one of very few, if not the only mining company up there in South Korea. So if you could just explain to our listeners, what is it about South Korea that drew Southern Gold up there, and what's it like to work up there?
Yeah, sure, Kerry. And look, it's the nub of it, isn't it? It's really quite a unique jurisdiction. And whenever I raise the fact that we're there, it's typical that people will go, really? I didn't know there was any mining in Korea, or there wasn't any gold in Korea. So it's one of those jurisdictions that has, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but it has genuinely flown below the radar. And I think partly because of this sort of the overhang of the North Korea question, and the, you know, that's really what's in the headlines and the newspapers and in the TV, and that's what occupies people's minds. But they forget that Korea is also the home of the Samsungs, the LGs, the Hyundais. It's a sophisticated manufacturing country. You know, it's fully developed, just like Japan. And it's an incredible success story in terms of North Asia. You know, their GDP per capita story from the sort of the mid 80s to now, it's just unbelievable, the growth rate that they've really pulled people out of poverty. And it's been an unbelievable story in terms of a nation under development and now fully developed and really in another league, really, when you compare it to many other countries in Asia. Now, why are we there? We're there because, not because it's the home of Samsung and LG, we're there because fundamentally the geology is first class. Okay. And in my presentation, I have a slide which is I call the tectonic continuum. And the reason I put that in there is to show that in that neighborhood, you've obviously got Japan to the southeast, and you've got the Jeongdong Peninsula off to the west of Korea and China. And these are localities where world-class gold deposits have been found in the near neighborhood. And we make the simple point that Korea is part of the same sort of tectonic continuum. It doesn't have identical geology. It's got parallel geology. There's lots of elements to the geology of Korea that have parallels in both of those other jurisdictions. And so in the case of Japan, for example, there is world-class epithermal deposits such as Hishikari that we're looking for in the southwest of Korea. And in the Jiangdong Peninsula of China, you've got these really big orogenic systems, massive gold deposits, some of the biggest in the world, in the Precambrian or really old rocks. And we see that in the more sort of northern half of South Korea. And so that's another deposit type that we look at. So we think that partly because of the socio-political context of the last couple of decades, it hasn't really had much attention since really the Ivanhoe Group were there in the 1990s. And so we're really a bit like the old Ivanhoe DNA kind of being reignited and reinserted back into the country. And that's what we're all about. Guys who are technically competent, very much good discovery records. A lot of them worked for Ivanhoe back in those days. We brought them back into the Korean system.
Okay, so they've already been up in Korea and they understand how it works and some of the, I guess, challenges, but also opportunities up there. Simon, what you're looking at is gold. There's a lot of drilling coming up shortly, which we will talk about. But is there a lot of data that you've been able to access before you started drilling? I mean, what's it like from a government, so I guess from a socioeconomic, political point of view, What's it like? We all know what Australia's like to mine around, but what's it like up in South Korea?
It's in a geological or exploration sense, it's probably a little bit like what it would have been in Australia in the 50s or 60s or something. It's sort of a bit, poorly developed in terms of the exploration culture there and the sort of data that we have available. And I'll give you a simple example. They do have some geophysics data, aeromagnetics and radiometrics were flown by the government back in the 1980s. And that data is available, but the flight line spacing is about 1.6 kilometers apart. So it's incredibly crude. And by Australian standards, it's sort of, very old school, shall we say. Yeah. And so look, in that respect, we've got some limitations in what we have access to. We do have some data that we have access to through the Ivanhoe Group and some of the work they did early days. There is some open file stuff that we can get access to. So there is data there. It does take a bit of time to delve into it and work out what's what, but we've got a lot of that old crew back together again who are familiar with the situation. So we've definitely been able to hit the ground running, shall I say, because we've got all that behind us, if you will.
And if I can go back just a little bit with you, Simon, because you're very much about making sure that you de-risk the projects and making sure that, I guess, the company's got a clear track forward. Yes. Given the fact that right now we're in the middle of a pandemic, given the fact that there are some challenges, has COVID impacted, you're in Australia, you've got projects in South Korea, has that impacted at all upon the project and what you're doing?
It has, yes, it has. We've had some impacts from COVID, which are a little bit frustrating, mainly to do with the logistics of moving our expatriate people around or getting them into country. Now, I have developed up my own kind of indigenous Korean team, if you will, in country. And that's something I'm very proud of, actually. The group has really done a lot of work on training and developing a group of Koreans to actually operate the drill programs. And we've been doing that over the course of the last two and a half years, I would say. And we've got a brilliant crew now. And the proof is in the pudding, Kerry. We've actually been able to keep moving forward with all our drill programs this year without really that much interruption, all executed by the Koreans. Now, there are some limitations. We haven't been able to do a lot of the project generation work that we do, where we go into these new areas. And we did a bit of that earlier this year before the COVID thing happened. But it would be fair to say that, we would have done a lot more work on the ground if the COVID thing hadn't occurred. So I'm not saying it hasn't been any impact, but we've been able to kind of manage it to a degree. And we're hopeful that come, say, 2021, we'll be perhaps not back to normal, but we'll have a couple of guys on the ground and we can kind of reignite that and keep moving forward.
Well, before we go delving into where Southern Gold's at the moment, in terms of Korea, as I go back to it again, is the government supportive of mining? You've got the guys on the ground there, and you're pretty much the only guys up there. Why haven't other people looked at this? Because I understand that the geology is good, the grades could be, I don't want to say exceptional, but pretty damn good up there as well. Could you just talk to that a little bit about Korea as a geological place to work and why others aren't moving in there as well?
Yeah, it's a little bit, I think it's a bit related to that question, that answer I gave about the Korean team and our ability to execute. I think to a degree, the barriers to entry in Korea are quite high. So, you've got the language barriers are there, obviously. Finding good technical people that are bilingual in both English and Korean is a challenge. And it's taken us a while to build the team that we have that have that capability. And I think that's underestimated by people, by the way. I think that that's a really critical part of how the corporate DNA of the company. And we've been operating there for some years. So we've learned our mistakes. We've kind of, got better at doing stuff. And I think for some of the gold majors too, say the Newcrest, the Newmonts of the world, I think, Korea is interesting to them. They understand the geological argument. It's just that the tenure system and the ability to operate there is not easy. And so the taking that step, if you will, is a big step to go in there. And I think to a degree, they're probably wanting to see some runs on the board, some proof that there is indeed potential for world-class gold deposits or precious metal deposits. And that's something that we're working on. I think it won't be long. I know that people are watching us very carefully or very closely. And to a degree, I think we had the dress rehearsal with the Ivanhoe Group. And going to your question about the government support, so Ivanhoe made a series of discoveries in the late 1990s, Unsan and Moisan being the two main ones. And from discovery to mining, it was a period of about two and a half years. And so that was very much a, and that's fast, right? In our industry, as you know,
going from
kind of actual discovery to turning the earth, then that is very quick. And yes, your question about the grade. So taking Unsan and Moisan as an example, Unsan at the beginning of the mine life, when they were mining the Bonanza grade at the beginning of that mining process, that had an average grade of 600 grams per tonne gold equivalent.
Hello. So, really?
Yeah. And it was actually what we call direct shipping ore. It's something you don't hear about in precious metals too often.
No.
But basically Ivanhoe excavated that material directly into drums and it went straight to a refiner on the east coast of Korea. And that was because the grade was so high. It didn't need processing. And so that's a very unusual situation, but they're the sort of deposits that we're looking for in Korea. And I think, you know, it's happened before. We're very convinced it can happen again. And these were deposits which were outcropping, right? So, and this is the sort of scenario that we're seeing when we're doing our work now, is that
Sorry to interrupt you. So why aren't they still there? Or were had a specific target, a specific area, and once that was mined, they were gone? Or what happened to the
mines that Ivanhoe found?
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically what happened was Ivanhoe, after making these discoveries, started their mining. They made their discoveries in Mongolia, the big old Yutolgoi deposits, so, which is the story everyone knows about, right? So it's world-class, massive system. And of course, Ivanhoe concentrated on that. So basically the team was pulled out of Korea, I would argue prematurely, but you know, it's an understandable decision. And they went and concentrated on the world-class system that was unfolding in Mongolia. Now that's part of the kind of story behind this. You know, when I've gone back to these old Ivanhoe geologists, it's basically an argument of unfinished business, right? They've done all this work, pulled out, and now we're going back to restart what was begun back in the 90s. And that's why this thing is so exciting, because not a great deal has happened since they were pulled out, right? So we see huge potential here, because really the fundamental technical thesis that was true back in the 90s with the Ivanhoe Group is true today.
That's actually really exciting. And you've got some of the people that were working on those particular projects working with you now.
Correct.
So exactly. They know the geology, and they know the provenance, they know where they're at, and they know what to
exactly.
Look for.
Exactly. And also there's some subtle stuff here too, Kerry, because you've got guys who work in Korea who understand the culture. And so, to be frank, you need to have a little bit of diplomacy about you as a geologist in the field. Yep. When you're walking through somebody's rice paddy, you've got to do that in a certain way, right? And you've got to be very respectful of the local people and treat yourself as a guest and very much, you know, at the behest of their approval. And so the way we conduct our operations, we're very, very careful about this stuff. In fact, if you have a look at our most recent release, and I know it's not on the front page, but you'll see on page 5, I've got a couple of photos. So I think it was page 5, or certainly near the back of the release, where we talk about the community engagement and how we do rehabilitation. And we've got an example there of photos where we've done the drilling and when we're post-drilling and we've rehabilitated it. And, you know, it looks like it might be a bit over the top from some people when they look at that. They go, wow, you know, you guys have done quite an effort there. But you know what, Kerry, we're playing the long game here. Mm. What happens is people in the local community see that. And when you go back there for round 2 drilling, they're very comfortable that you're not a cowboy and that you're actually doing the right thing. And so they're more likely to engage with you in a positive way and enable you to do round 2, round 3 drilling. And you can get more intensive in operations because you've conducted yourself in the appropriate manner.
Yeah, and I guess it is understanding local culture and just giving them the dignity and being responsible about where the heavy boots go.
Exactly.
Now, I can't pronounce any of these places because it's Korean, so I'm going to let Simon do this because we were having a bit of a laugh off camera because yeah. Simon was talking about some of these the areas that they're going to drill. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I'm not going to do that. I am not even going to attempt to say the name, Simon, but before we do, a couple more things I want to just talk about with you. Let's talk firstly about money raised. You've just raised just over 10 million, which is great. Means that you are well funded to come into this drilling program that you've got. First of all, why now? Why that amount? Where's this funding going to be put to?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, Southern Gold's a $15 million company trying to do something pretty big, which is to go into a new country. We want to engage a lot of teams, we want to ramp up a lot of drilling. And that's so our ambitions are very high. And we didn't really have the bank balance to do it. So, you know, we were one of those companies that always had about $2.5 million in the bank, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So when you've got that situation, you're always a bit cum raising. You always can't quite commit to the program that would really do things justice. And as I was explaining before, we've got a fairly unique technical opportunity here, which is a big, big opportunity. And so what we're trying to do is get the funding which enables us to really hit this hard. And so what I did in the late last year, I ran a series of site visits with a lot of very technically savvy investors, people who have the kind of technical crews that can kind of see what we're up to. And I've been able to convince them fundamentally that we're onto something quite unique. And so they've come in large. And of course, gold is very popular right now. Mm. And so we've taken advantage of that positive environment along with these cornerstones. And we've been able to get a raising of a scale that funds us for several years, takes away that cum raising monkey off our back. And it means we can concentrate on really delivering good programs into these targets that we're identifying. There's also another subtle thing. When you have got the bedding down of the raising, when you've got the funding actually bedded down, it means the managing director can spend a bit more time on some of the strategic elements. And I won't go into details, but obviously I'm aware of some opportunities in country, which could be very, very interesting for Southern Gold going forward. So I'm quite familiar with Korea. I've been involved in Korea for some years now, and I am seeing opportunities there that would be very, very good for the company going forward on a strategic level.
And when you say on opportunities on a strategic level, are you going to stay focused on gold, or could this be something wide? So the focus will always be on gold.
Absolutely. Yes. No, we're not going to become one of those diversified, you know, looking at tungsten and graphite and all that kind of stuff. No, we're very much focused on precious metals. I think as a junior, new jurisdiction, particularly with the potential for the epithermal deposits in the southwest of the country, we're going to remain focused on that because we think the opportunity to find something world-class is huge.
All right, before I'm going to bring up the elephant in the room, you know I'm going to bring it up. There's a joint venture. It's been a bit of chat about this, Simon. Sorry, I'm just throwing this at you. I think it was Bluebird joint venture. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because there's some changes going on. Where are you at with that? And is that impacting the future growth of the company? Can you just explain to our listeners about the Bluebird joint venture?
Yeah, sure. So we've had a series of releases in the last couple of months, which have clearly signaled a different strategic posture on the part of Southern Gold in respect of the joint venture. In the release that we put out, when would it have been? About 6 weeks ago, I guess, we articulated the fact that there were different views about the timeframes of execution to get to gold production. And certainly Southern Gold has taken the view that their timeframes are going to be longer than perhaps were expected some time ago. And, you know, as often happens with joint ventures, you can have, you know, differences of opinion and things like that. So we've taken the view that it's best for us to allow Bluebird to take 100% of the projects, move them forward as best they can and on their own agenda, unimpeded by us. And we will release some value through this process. To be frank, I don't think there's a great deal of value for the joint venture in our share price. I think that's sort of quite obvious from comparing you know, the trading in London versus the ASX, and that arbitrage is pretty obvious. But at the end of the day, I've got to do two things as a managing director. And the principal one is managing risk. And so, you know, this is partly a risk management exercise on my part, but also secondly, you know, I've got a big opportunity here. You know, I've just explained about the geological opportunity, and we're looking for a world-class deposit. So I'm focusing on that. And so we're really, you know, basically trying to go from having 90% of our focus on that to 100% focus on that. And that's partly what this is about. So we can extract value, reduce our risks. Both parties can kind of really move forward under what, you know, what drives them the best. And we can see, you know, I think it might be a win-win for both companies at the end of the day.
You know, I'm not going to bring you down to an exact time or date, but what's your kind of a time frame around this, just to give current investors and potential future investors, as you say, it's de-risking so you can focus on what we're about to talk about. What's your time frame, do you think?
Yeah, look, I think we'll have a determination. So it's going to an independent expert to be valued, and that process will probably take 5 or 6 weeks. So, you know, we should know something, you know, the middle of the month after next. And then there's a 2-month period for that to be settled. So the whole thing should be sorted out roughly by the end of the year, maybe early next year. So it's not going to drag on forever. We've basically gone to the umpire to determine the value. And that's important for the Southern Gold shareholders, right? Because absolutely, at the end of the day, when we do a deal, you know, you could argue a lot about the commerciality or otherwise of deals done between companies. And when you've got a very wide bid offer spread, then, you know, you bring in the umpire, he blows the whistle, and you know, everyone has to live with the decision of the umpire. And that's an important element of this, Kerry. Whatever the umpire comes up with here, both companies have to accept it. And so, you know, I'm very, very comfortable with that process. And I think it's important for our shareholders to see that we indeed had a process of that nature.
Is it easy to find the umpire? You know, sometimes maybe I'm going to, if it was you and I, I'd say, well, Simon, I don't like that umpire. And you could go, it's like picking a jury, you know. I don't like that one, that one, or that one. And now
that's right. That's right. I mean, there are certain ground rules for picking somebody, isn't there? You know, like, for example, I can't just go down and pick one of my mates and get them to do it. No. So basically, both companies need to agree who the umpire is. You know, if you go to an internationally recognized world leading consultancy firm that does this sort of thing, it's their bread and butter, then there's little to kind of argue, isn't there? So it's likely to go to a major firm. Failing that, if the parties can't agree on who the umpire is, we can take it to the umpire of the umpire. So in our legal agreement, there's the facility to take it to an independent body to determine who that is. So I'm quite comfortable that the process is under control, and we'll sort it out over the next couple of months.
Okay, so it's just de-risking so that you can focus on the drilling. So we're funded. Yep. We're going to get that joint venture. That's going to be parked and gone. So let's talk about what investors can look forward to in the future. You talked about Ivanhoe being there, and it was like direct shipping oil, which is insane for precious metals.
Yeah.
And you're saying that's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for these high-grade deposits, which in your opinion are there. It's a matter of bringing that drilling into a bit closer spacing to figure out where to next. So let's talk about what's happening now, because I think drilling's already started. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. No, we had a bit of a break just recently from the drilling, partly imposed because they had a series of typhoons that came through Korea. And in fact, they've had more typhoons than normal this year. I'm sure everyone's going to talk about climate change and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, the thing about Korea is it has, in around about August, September, it has typhoon season. Most typhoons hit Japan and then don't really go much further, but occasionally a few typhoons keep going and hit South Korea. This year they had a couple of those, and it hasn't, you know, had a major impact on our operations other than we had a lot of rain. And at Wolyu, where we've just started drilling, this is steep topography. You don't have a lot of rain.
But Simon, just say that name again, because I honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I can't.
Wolyu, yes, that's one of our main targets. A bit like having a whole bunch of marbles in your mouth as you say the name, isn't it? Wolyu. I believe in Korean, it's something to do with I believe the translation is the moonlight on flat water or the river water.
I thought you were going to say it means bloody big gold deposit.
Well, that could be that. But look, you know, Wadi was an interesting one in that we've had some very encouraging initial hits there, both from underground channel sampling of the vein in situ, as well as a couple of holes which were just under the mine workings. And we basically have to find a couple of high-grade shoots there. And when I say high-grade, I mean, you know, 15 grams per ton gold equivalent as a kind of rough average in the shoot areas. And so it's about a half an ounce per ton or thereabouts. And so pretty high-grade and certainly economic grades. And so this program that we've just started is where we've basically moved off to the west into government forestry land, and we're drilling deeper into the system to kind of prove scale and hopefully prove multiple vein systems are carrying grade. And if we can do that, then we're going to be able to demonstrate a sort of a larger or higher amount of ounces per vertical meter. And it really, if we can demonstrate that scale, then it will give us the confidence to go to the next stage of drilling, which will be probably done from underground. We'll put an underground development drive at the bottom of the mountain and then drill the whole mountain out to see what's going on. Yeah.
Is that the focus right now, this particular area? Is that the focus now, or do you have some other projects coming up?
No, we've got some other projects coming out. We've got a project called Dokchon, which we've got approval to drill, and we're still trying to work out exactly when we might start drilling there. It's probably still a few weeks away, I would guess, before we put a rig in there. Excuse me. The other one too is we got some very good results back from a project called AFA, and it's a very, very different kettle of fish to a lot of the other projects that we've been looking at. So it's technically a little bit unusual. We're doing some more work on the ground there. In fact, we're going to be doing some ground geophysics, and we're doing some petrology to have a look at the nature of the mineralized fluids, just to see what sort of target type we've got there. We think it might be a mineralized breccia pipe or something like that. And so we're definitely going to go back there for round two, because we basically hit mineralization every hole we drilled there.
Oh, wow.
In one case, up to 100, you know, over 100 grams per ton in a very narrow vein. But what we demonstrated with that program is that there's plenty of gold and silver in the system. We haven't quite worked out the three dimensions, if you know what I mean. It's a bit like we did a scout program where we hit gold in every hole, but we're not quite sure what's going on with the structure, you know, its orientation, how big the system is, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll go back there and we'll do round two, where we'll put a lot more holes in and see what the hell's going on.
So and are these projects, are they all fairly close together in terms of the geographic and geological areas?
A lot of our projects are in southwestern Korea, which is sort of in the the Cretaceous basins off to the southwest, not far from the operating gold mine, which is the Unsan Moisan system that has been run by a Korean private group. That was purchased off Ivanhoe back in the day. Huh. And that's still operating, by the way. And Wadi, though, is off towards more the center of the country in a different Cretaceous basin environment. So it's a bit of a different beast, if you will. So it would be fair to say that 90% of our work is in sort of the southern half of South Korea, where a lot of the Cretaceous basins are.
Simon, we're running out of time and I really need to ask you this. Okay, so we've talked about Korea, we've talked about what's going on, you're de-risking, et cetera. Why do you think investors, first of all, you are very low market cap at the moment, we've talked about the grade and it actually sounds like it could potentially, we can't, you know, this is forward-looking statements, et cetera, we don't actually know, but you seem to be pretty excited about the project, you're well-funded. Why should investors be sitting up and taking a good look at Southern Gold at the moment? You've spoken about cornerstone investors and you've talked about taking up people to Korea who are technically savvy and they got excited. So just let's round it off with why you think Southern Gold is something that people need to put on their radar.
Yeah, okay. So whenever I take people on site visits like those technical savvy investors I was talking about, sometimes that's very difficult to get across in a corporate presentation, you know, because you've got a limited amount of time and a limited number of slides. But a big thing about site visits is you get an idea of corporate culture, and two, what is the big picture potential, right? Yeah. And you know, you can look at a geological map on a slide, but you don't get a very good feel for really what is the underlying investment thesis here. And in Southern Gold's case in Korea, the underlying thesis is this. We've got first-class geology where there's been very, very little modern exploration. And we're effectively the first Western group, other than Ivanhoe, to come in and start looking at this stuff seriously. And it's a little bit like a kid in a candy shop. We're finding all sorts of stuff that we like. We have to be careful to prioritize our projects so we don't get too distracted. But we're running a process, what we call project generation, which is a kind of countrywide analysis of the opportunity. Now, here's the thing, Kerry. When we go out and have a look at systems in the field for the first time, we're finding new mineral systems every 5 to 6 weeks of field work. That's an incredible hit rate.
Yeah.
And probably one of the fastest hit rates of any exploration play globally at present. And I don't think people quite understand that. That's why we put in these, you know, when their releases come out with the new projects like Jinan, the Zhanghua, which we announced just the other day, that these things have been generated every sort of 4 to 5 months as we get approval from the government. And really, when people come on those site visits and they look at what we're working on, they come away with the impression, this is just the first chapter in a book which has got a lot of chapters to come. And yeah, we're just starting a process of assessment of a countrywide play where it is early days, but the whole country is really open up to an incredible exploration opportunity. And so they're getting on board now because our market cap's low and our potential is incredibly high. That's the essence of it.
And you're in there, you understand the jurisdiction, you understand the culture. There's a lot of potential upside here with Southern Gold, ASX code SAU, as I said before. Simon Mitchell, thank you so much for explaining, I guess, something that most of our listeners wouldn't truly understand. So I'd love to get back to you towards the end of the year, perhaps when the Bluebird joint venture, that's all done and finished, and see how the drilling results are coming along. For today, thanks for talking to Small Caps.
No, thanks, Kerry. That's been great. Thanks for the opportunity.